together for me? Won't be a problem, but it will take a little while. I remember culling out a bunch of candidates from the original search because I was only looking for blondes. Shouldn't take more than 30 minutes, maybe less. Wow, that fast? We aim to please. Shoot that to me as soon as you can, and thanks again. I really do appreciate it. It's for your mom, dude. No problem. Gavin hung up, and Jack pocketed his phone. That was really good news, Jack thought. But it also meant he needed to get back to his place. He'd have to do his sightseeing some other time, and his chivapi would have to wait. He turned and headed back for the Latin Bridge. It was a good thing there wasn't a toll booth at this crosswalk, otherwise he'd be paying a fortune. It just proved how good the Airbnb apartment's location was. Jack kept an eye out for the man in the Ray-Bans in his peripheral vision, but didn't pick anyone up as he sped past knots of tourists and locals, checking out the fruits and vegetables at an outdoor stand. He turned off the main street and onto a narrower one, then left again onto the street facing his building, past a bar where two old men smoked cigarettes and drank beer in the sunshine. He turned the next corner into the little alleyway leading to the parking lot that fronted his entrance and turned sharply again and slammed his back against the wall of his building, listening. The soft clop of leather soles on concrete stuttered nearer. A suit coat turned the corner. Jack grabbed the heavily muscled man by the lapels and spun him around in a 180, like a ballroom swing. The man's wide back slammed into the concrete wall and he oofed as he hit, his Ray-Bans clattering to the ground. Who the hell? But Jack was cut short by an unexpected elbow punch to his chest. It was weak because the man had no momentum behind the thrust, but it was hard enough to knock Jack's grip loose. But before the man could throw another punch, Jack was already in counterattack mode, returning the favor of an elbow strike, but this one fired straight into the man's pockmarked face. The man howled as the cartilage in his nose broke, gushing blood onto his shirt. Jack pulled his arm back to launch a devastating strike with his right fist, when a pistol racked behind his ear. Oh, shit. Chapter 28. Near the Italy-Slovenia border. The Italian customs officer boarded the Gulfstream 550 in the FBO hangar at the Trieste airport, and after a cursory inspection stamped passports and wished everyone a good stay in his country. Dominic Dom Caruso, Adara Sherman, and Bartosz Midas Jankowski deplaned without luggage. The director of transportation, Lisanne Robertson, a former Marine and the newest member of the campus team, stayed behind, in keeping with her role as security for the plane and crew, though nobody believed that the sleepy port city posed much of a threat to anybody on this operation. The three Americans picked up the rental car that Lisanne had arranged and headed for Nova Gorica, just 30 minutes across the border. The Trieste airport was the closest one in the region to the small Slovenian city. Paradoxically, the quickest route was also the longest, according to the GPS, but even that highway was only a two-lane through mostly flat farm country, heading toward the mountains. They passed through a customs station without issue and arrived at the police directorate complex in Nova Gorica in less than an hour. Jerry Hendley put Dom in the lead for this particular mission, though he had fewer years in the field as an operative than Midas, a retired U.S. Army Ranger colonel. Not that the rock-jawed snake-eater couldn't break down an Iraqi insurgent or a Taliban fighter in a field interrogation under combat conditions, but as an FBI agent seconded to the campus, Dom had the superior experience and qualifications to conduct a softer civilian investigation. Normally Jerry would have sent Ding Chavez or John Clark to head up an operation like this, but the two of them were in Pretoria, South Africa, on a consult with the Rekkies, the South African Special Forces Brigade. Dom was glad for the chance to show his leadership skills. The goal today was to first meet Detective Oblak and discuss Jack's case, and after gaining his confidence, persuade him to arrange a meeting with Elena Iliescu to try to get her to open up about the attack and her possible connection to the Iron Syndicate. Dom suggested Midas wait in the van while he and Adara made the first attempt. Two people, one a woman, would appear less threatening than three in a room. A frosted-haired woman in a gray jumpsuit and wearing a photo badge sat behind the small security desk in the lobby, focused intently on her computer screen. Dom approached her with a big friendly smile. Dobr dan, good morning, were the only two words of Slovenian that Dom spoke, and he'd picked that up from Google Translate only 10 minutes ago. He'd found over the years that just saying hello in the local language broke the ice, especially with overworked bureaucrats. The middle-aged woman glanced up from her screen with a sour look on her face, like somebody had double-dipped a chip in her guacamole. Dobr dan. Clearly his mastery of Slovenian wasn't up to snuff, Dom thought. So much for breaking the ice. He soldiered on. We have an appointment to see Detective Oblak. Your identity papers, please. Dom and Adara handed over their passports. Dom included his FBI credentials in a separate wallet. The woman scanned the documents, unimpressed. She handed them back. Let me check his log. Her red lacquered nails clacked on the keyboard. A screen pulled up. She shook her head. Detective Oblak isn't here. Dom stepped closer to the desk. I'm sorry? There must be some confusion. He's expecting us. He wanted to add, and we've traveled over 4,000 miles to get here, but he bit his tongue. Quantico had taught him that little trick. Keeps an agent from sticking his foot in his yapper, his training officer had explained.
He's not available. He's out in the field.
Perhaps you can call him for us. It's quite urgent. The woman frowned an are-you-kidding-me glance over the top of her reading glasses. Adara smiled. We wouldn't ask if it wasn't extremely important. The woman sighed, picked up a cordless phone, and dialed. A man's voice answered on the other end. They chatted in Slovenian. Dom and Adara didn't understand a word. The woman's eyebrows raised. She handed Dom the phone.
Detective Oblak will speak to you.
Thanks. Dom took the receiver. This is Dominic Caruso. Mr. Caruso, I'm sorry I missed our appointment in regards to Elena Iliescu. I'm at the hospital right now. Why don't you come over here and we can discuss the matter further? In the hospital? Are you okay? I'm fine. Thank you for asking. It's Elena Iliescu you should be asking about. How is she?
She's quite dead.
Dead? How?
It's obvious, Oblak said in a flat, even voice. You killed her.
Chapter 29. I'm sorry, but I don't know what you're talking about, Dom said into the phone, glancing over at Adara. She was clearly concerned. When your office set the appointment to meet with me to discuss her case, you signed her death warrant. That's a serious accusation. Like you said, maybe we need to come over there and talk about it.
I'll text you the address, Mr. Caruso. Meet me in the morgue. And please, drive carefully. The roads here are quite dangerous.
In their respective lines of work, Dom and Adara, a former combat medic, had seen plenty of corpses in their day, many of them in states of ruin so horrific they wouldn't dare describe them to their civilian friends. But Elena Iliescu's lifeless body on the coroner's slab was pristine. Her firm-toned body was completely intact. Even her breasts were full and round, no doubt the result of skillful plastic surgery. Rather than dead, she appeared to be just sleeping. Dom swore she'd wake up at any minute. The coroner will confirm the cause of death this afternoon, but the attending physician assures me it was heart failure, likely brought on by a catastrophic myocardial infarction. Iliescu was dead at the scene. Where was she when she died? We put her in one of our safe houses under police protection, as per her request. And I take it no one came in or out of the house. Only the clinic nurse who was called in when Iliescu complained of a minor headache. At Dom's skeptical look, he added, we checked her out. That nurse has worked at that clinic for 11 years. Adara pointed at the corpse. She's in better shape than most Olympic athletes. She can't be more than 35 years old. 32, according to her passport, Oblak said. A heart attack for a woman this age and in this condition is highly unlikely,
Adara said. Which is why you suspect foul play, Dom said. O'Block shrugged. It's quite a coincidence that about the same time your plane landed in Trieste, this woman was being pronounced dead, don't you think? Which is why you accused us of killing her. Someone killed her, and chose this time to do it. The only independent variable in this equation is you. Something about you coming here resulted in this woman's death. Well, we sure as hell didn't tell anybody we were coming. That leaves your people. O'Block's jaw clenched. And you're accusing me of divulging your arrival and your intention of meeting with this woman? You, or someone in your office? Dom wondered if the Iron Syndicate might have had sources inside O'Block's organization. Maybe the person was O'Block himself. Not possible, the Slovenian said. I wouldn't expect you to say anything else. But if I'm right, then you know you have a problem inside your department, and you're going to have to deal with it. Adara felt the heat rising between these two roosters. She decided to intervene before the feathers started to fly. Why do you think anyone would want to kill her? Adara asked. O'Block's rugged mouth broke into a thin smile. I was hoping you might shed some light on this subject. Who indeed would have a motive to want to see her dead, a woman on the verge of filing charges against the man she claimed attacked her? Jack Ryan had nothing to do with this, I assure you, Dom said. Jack was one of the best guys he knew, and not just because they were cousins. Ms. Sherman asked me why anyone would want to kill her. The term of art is motive, and right now, the only person on the planet I'm aware of that might have any motive whatsoever is Jack Ryan. You don't really believe Jack Ryan tried to hurt that woman? Highly unlikely. But that's what we were investigating. O'Block glanced at Elena's corpse. Until this happened. He turned back to Dom. So tell me, why is an FBI agent getting involved in this case? Officially, this isn't an FBI case. I just happen to work for them. Jack is a close friend, and he works for another friend of mine, Jerry Hendley. So does Ms. Sherman. Yes, Jerry Hendley, the former senator. Jack Ryan has many good friends, some in very high places. Yeah, you could say that. And for whatever reason, Elena Iliescu allegedly attacked him, and now she is dead. O'Block's eyes bore into Dom's. Where does that leave me? Up shit creek, Dom thought, just like me. He'd come all this way to try to find out Elena Iliescu's connection to the Iron Syndicate, if any, and why they wanted to kill Jack. He was prepared to cajole or bribe her with offers of protection or even cash to get answers. But now she was gone. His only hope at the moment was O'Block. Sometimes cases don't get solved. It's part of the business. True. But the case isn't closed yet, is it? He glanced back down at the corpse. Such a shame. A beautiful young woman. Dead for no apparent reason. Dom wasn't sure how much to confide in the Slovenian detective, particularly in regard to the Iron Syndicate. What little Dom actually knew. But there was something about the way O'Block presented himself. He was definitely not happy that the two of them were standing here with no apparent authority over a corpse that used to be his primary suspect and or witness to an attempted murder. O'Block might just be a local cop who resented the hell out of the arrival of an American FBI agent into his jurisdiction. God knows he got that kind of reaction when he encountered insecure or incompetent law enforcement back home, which fortunately wasn't too often. O'Block didn't strike him as either insecure or incompetent, but then again, it was too early to tell. If he wasn't either of those things, then why did he resent their presence? Was he hiding something? Dom just couldn't be sure. And a silent exchange with Adara confirmed his own hesitation to divulge Iliescu's Iron Syndicate connection. Better not tip their hand just yet. You said that there was no one you could think of with a motive other than Jack. I can think of two more, Dom said. Enlighten me. Dom pointed at the corpse. The first person is her. You think she killed herself? It's possible. With what motive? The same as the other suspect. And who might that be? I believe Jack when he said that this woman tried to kill him. Either she was doing it for herself, or she was instructed to do so by somebody else. Instructed or hired, Adara added. So your other suspect is Iliescu's unknown employer. Logically, those are your only two choices. But I still don't have a motive for why she would kill herself, or why her employer would order her to kill herself or have someone else kill her. Sure you do. It's Jack. Or technically, her failure to kill Jack. If her employer is anything like the Mexican cartels or the Russian mafia, her failure to execute her mission would result in a far more gruesome death than one she might inflict upon herself. That, or her employer had her killed because she was in your custody and they were afraid she might betray them. Dom grinned. But you already thought of all that, didn't you? We may be a small country of villages, but we don't raise idiots, Mr. Caruso. Do you have any idea who might have hired her, or who wanted to kill Jack? Adara asked. The only reason why I agreed to meet with you and allow you to interview her was to find the answers to both of those questions. My office has limited resources, and unfortunately, we've reached a dead end. Or you're trying to find out what we know because you're on the same payroll as her, Dom thought. And if you are, Detective Oblak, your life is at risk now, too. But trying to guess Oblak's motives was a losing game. Dom decided to throw the dice. Have you ever heard of the Iron Syndicate? Dom asked. Oblak shook his head. No. What is it? Dom was pretty good at catching people lying. But so were most cops, which was why cops were harder to catch at lying than just about anybody else, even other cops. Maybe Oblak knew more than he was letting on, but there was no way to tell from his body language. We don't know much. It's an international criminal enterprise. There's a very weak link between Iliescu and that organization. A friend of a friend kind of thing. I can call my intelligence unit and put in an inquiry. Why would this Iron Syndicate want to kill Jack Ryan? That's what we came here to ask her about. Dom looked at the corpse. And she ain't talking. My advice to you, then, is to retrace her steps. She told us she had come from Trieste, which we have since confirmed. I can get you her address there. Oblak pulled up his phone to forward it. I don't want to step on any Italian toes, Dom said. Italian cops were as touchy as anybody else about outsiders intruding on their turf. Oblak shrugged. The coroner is driving up from Ljubljana. That means he won't be performing the autopsy until later this afternoon. Legally, I'm not required to issue a notice of death to the Italian government until the cause of death is confirmed. Depending on the blood work, that might be as late as tomorrow morning. Dom's phone dinged. He checked it. Iliescu's Trieste address. If they left now, they could be there within the hour. Plenty of time to snoop around the place before the Italian police would even know they'd been there. Interesting. That's awfully generous of you, Detective. Consider it a professional courtesy. Yeah. Or a setup, Dom thought. He was glad that Gavin had issued them untraceable phones, since Oblak had his number. I've handed out a few professional courtesies myself over the years. I usually attach a string or two. You want to know my motive? I'll make it simple. I'm a patriot. I love my country as much as you love yours. Slovenia has survived countless occupations since the time of the Caesars, and yet we are still here. We know who we are. One people, one language. He glanced back at the corpse. Now that we're part of the EU, our borders are open, and anyone can cross them, including our enemies. And I'm powerless to stop it. Worse, I don't have the authority to cross those same borders and prevent it. It's a one-way street, and I don't care for it. So you're using us to do your dirty work. O'Block smiled. One courtesy begets another. So my string is that if you find out anything about this Iron Syndicate or this woman's connection to it, I want to be informed.
Fair enough.
Then maybe you'll let us know about the cause of death and the time you call it into the Italians.
Fair enough.
Dom extended his hand. So did Adara. They shook. We'll be in touch, Detective. And tell your large friend in the van to mind his speed limit. We're much more strict about that sort of thing in Slovenia than they are in Italy. Dom hid his surprise. He didn't think they'd been under surveillance. That's a good start, Dom thought as he climbed into the van. Or maybe O'Block was just handing them over to his Iron Syndicate connection in Italy, waiting to find a way to throw them off the trail, or worse. Either way, Trieste was the next stop. Jack was in trouble. And this was their only shot. Chapter 30. Sarajevo, Bosnia and Herzegovina. Jack stared at his hands, silently fuming. He knew he was under observation by the camera unit shielded in a translucent dome in the ceiling of the small interrogation room. No point in giving anybody any ammunition to use against him. He glanced around the room for the umpteenth time, bored out of his mind. A desk, a couple chairs, industrial carpet, acoustical tiles on the walls. Not exactly a torture chamber, unless you counted annoyed frustration as inhumane psychological duress. What was taking so long? It felt like he'd been in there for hours. But without his iWatch and iPhone, he couldn't know for sure. They'd been taken from him for security purposes. The electronic lock clicked and the steel door swung open. Dragan Kolak, stepping past a uniformed guard, carried two cups of steaming coffee in his hands. The guard shut the door behind him as Kolak set the coffees down on the table and took the only open seat.
Black coffee, yes, Kolak said, not really asking.
Thanks, Jack said, not really meaning it. He took a sip. Not bad. Agent Kolak was straight out of central casting for an American cop show. Rumpled suit, loose tie, thin graying hair badly cut, and cheap leather shoes slightly scuffed. Only Kolak wasn't a cop. He introduced himself as an agent of OSA-OBA, the Bosnian version of the CIA. Everything check out? Jack had provided Jerry Hendley's direct contact information, along with his own passport and wallet containing his international driver's permit, an ATM card, two credit cards, and about $100 in Bosnian convertible marks. He knew Kolak had been running background checks since he'd last seen him.
Your passport appears up to date and valid. So let's get down to business, Mr. Ryan.
He blinked his overly large, sad eyes. The sooner the better. I hadn't planned on spending my vacation in the basement of a security facility.
Then perhaps you shouldn't have attacked my agent.
He took the first swing. If my other agent hadn't been there, I wonder what else you would have done to Porvistia. I was just defending myself.
Quite skillfully for a...
Kolak snapped his fingers, trying to prompt his memory.
Ah, yes. A financial analyst.
You obviously believe me, or you would have had me arrested, or whatever else your agency does with criminals.
I believe what my agents reported. And lucky for you, they're honest. But if I were you, I'd stay away from Agent Vistia. He wants to return the favor of the broken nose.
Tell him I'm sorry about that. And the shirt.
So you came here for vacation?
Tourism.
Yes. And what led you to pick Sarajevo as your destination? It's not exactly high on most Americans' lists of places to visit.
I'm a student of history. Always wanted to come here.
As your guys probably know, I was just visiting the Assassination Museum. We have a lot of history here for sure, Mr. Ryan. And not all of it pleasant, as you must know. Very complicated, too. Just like my job here. Kolak took his first sip of coffee. Your passport says you were just in Slovenia. I didn't stamp it myself, I promise. Another history tour. Business. More financial analysis. As you already know, I work for an American firm, Hendley Associates. We were hired to do some work for a company in Ljubljana. Yes, I've confirmed both. And yet you found yourself in the remote mountains near Kozjak Falls. Jack stiffened. Where I was attacked. And yet the woman you say attacked you is the one who winds up in hospital. Self-defense. Self-defense. And yet you're not the one in hospital. You're really quite the violent man, aren't you? I don't go looking for trouble, if that's what you mean. And yet it comes seeking after you wherever you go. A pity. Are we done here? Just a few more questions, if you don't mind. You have until I finish my coffee. Unless you plan to arrest me. No. Nor do I plan to have you deported, nor charged with espionage, nor tossed into a rendition facility far from the prying eyes of your government, all of which is in my power to do. In that case, what do you want to know? What is your interest in Aida Kuric? The question caught Jack by surprise. He hoped it didn't show on his face. How could the man know about that? Well, obviously, they'd been following him. But why? I'm not sure that's any of your concern, Jack said. Aida Kuric is a citizen of my country, and it is my sworn duty to protect the people and constitution of Bosnia. And when a violent foreign national enters my country to hunt down one of my fellow citizens? Well, that's very much my concern. So much for keeping a low profile, Jack thought. Well, when you put it that way, I kind of see your point. So I'll repeat the question, Mr. Ryan. What is your interest in Aida Kuric? The best lie Jack knew was one that contained the most truth. But any lie at this point might put him in harm's way. And sitting here, he couldn't quite figure out what advantage there was in lying to Kolak at all. Technically, I'm here on an errand for my mother. Your mother? What kind of mission are you running for her? Mission? No, it's more like an errand. I'm making a delivery, a letter. What kind of letter? Just a letter from my mother to Aida. She knew I was going to be in Slovenia, and she asked me to come down here to find Aida so that I could give her a letter she wrote to her. Kolak leaned forward, his elbows on the table. And how does your mother know Aida Kuric? When Aida was a little girl during the war, she received a bad eye injury. My mother performed surgery on her. She lost contact with Aida over the years and asked me if I could find her. She wanted to know how Aida was doing after all this time, and to let Aida know that she was still thinking about her. Kolak sat back in his chair, rubbing his chin, his face lost in thought. Finally, he said, as incredible as your story sounds, I am still inclined to believe you, Mr. Ryan. Then I'm free to go? Why not? Kolak stood. So did Jack. Kolak handed him a business card. If you run out of resources in your search for Ms. Kuric, feel free to contact me. Perhaps I can be of some assistance. Jack was confused. Why would Kolak want to help him find Aida? He slipped the card into his pocket. Well, I appreciate that. If you'd just let me get my stuff, I'll get out of your hair. Follow me. Kolak opened the door. Just one favor, if I may. When you find her, would you mind letting me know? You're telling me that you won't be tracking my every step? Kolak shook his head. I don't see any reason to. Besides, my department is, how do you say, short-handed. My resources are better deployed elsewhere.
So why do you want to know when I find her?
Just curious. It's a fascinating story.
Kolak flashed a smile full of crooked teeth.
Jack and Kolak shook hands in front of the OSA-OBA main building, a drab, unremarkable structure on a modest, narrow street just up a long, steep block north of Marsala-Tita. A half-block east, a remote camera positioned behind the one-way glass of a third-story apartment window recorded the handshake. The camera software triggered an alarm on a laptop a half-kilometer away. A woman, an officer in Russia's main intelligence directorate, GRU, glanced up from texting on her phone, noting the image capture. Her hazel eyes were light brown today. Depending on her mood, they could also shift from gold to pale green.
Who is it?
A Russian man's voice from the kitchen. He was preparing a pot of tea.
It's our boy, Dragan Kolak.
The facial recognition software automatically logged name, place, and time. But per their protocol, she manually logged the same data into another database on a separate computer. Their sources pegged Kolak as a central figure in the Bosnian security services. They just weren't sure whose side he was playing for. Part of their job was to find out. More important, they wanted to know if he knew where the stolen thermobaric missiles were, or at least who had them. Finished, she returned to the image capture. Kolak headed back into the building, but the man he shook hands with was walking toward the camera. She dragged the red camera target reticle to the scowling, bearded face. The target reticle flashed three times, indicating it was searching for the man's identity. A moment later, it turned back to solid red. A rare miss. She froze the live video feed long enough to capture the man's facial image as a still photo, then saved it to the search alert file. Her partner leaned over her shoulder, setting a steaming cup of tea down by her elbow just as Jack turned the corner, heading back toward the main drag. The camera tracked him until he disappeared.
Who's that?
He pushed his wire-rimmed spectacles closer to his eyes for clarity. The aroma of cigarettes and cinnamon in her hair made his mouth water.
A friend of Golak's, perhaps.
Name?
None.
The man leaned closer to Jack's saved image.
How is that possible? Beard, mustache, dark eyes. Perhaps not distinctive enough for the algorithm.
Perhaps. He stood erect again, sipping his tea. Facial recognition technology was advancing rapidly, but it was still limited by one significant fact. Recognition was a comparative exercise. The quality of existing images in the search database, or the lack of them, ultimately determined the software's success. She scrubbed the video backward, capturing the footage of Jack walking toward the camera until the turn. She saved the clip and loaded that into the system as well.
Gate capture will help us keep an eye on him, and whoever he meets with might give us a clue to his identity.
Send it along to Khadinka. He was referring to GRU's main headquarters in Moscow, a run-down 9-story glass tower affectionately known as the Aquarium.
Maybe they'll have something on him.
The woman tapped more keys.
Done.
Ploča, Croatia. Beneath a clouded quarter moon, the Greek-registered Aegis Star sat low in the water on her 20-meter beam, anchored in the small cove just beyond the mouth of the port of Ploča, the second busiest on the Croatian coast. The ship wasn't scheduled to unload its cargo until mid-morning the following day. A warm breeze chucked the cold Adriatic tide against the rusting blue hull, its deck illumined only by dim navigation lights on the bow and stern. The bridge was dark. The low hum of an electric outboard motor cut to silence as the FC-470 rubber-hulled Zodiac combat craft drifted to a halt at the stern. 10 Russian KSSO operators scrambled silently up the aft ladder, carrying only suppressed pistols on secured holsters and plastic cuffs. The KSSO was Russia's newest and most effective special operations unit. It was led by an eager young lieutenant who believed that an operation was only as good as the intel that drove it. Having trained for this kind of mission previously, and possessing both the ship's schematics and its crew manifest, KSSO made short work of securing the vessel. They first subdued the lone night watch on deck with a blow to the back of his skull, and then bound and gagged the rest of the sleeping, unarmed crewmen in their bunks, including their captain, a fat, flatulent Greek who reeked of ouzo and stale tobacco. 20 minutes later, they were below decks, breaking open the last of 32 10-foot-long wooden crates in hold number 3. The lieutenant swore prodigiously as he yanked off his balaclava and called his commander on an encrypted satellite phone. "Another dead end," he reported. "No thermobarics. No defectors. Where the hell are they?"
Chapter 31. Sarajevo, Bosnia and Herzegovina. After his interrogation by Kolak, Jack returned to his apartment. He opened up his laptop and found an email from Gavin on the Secure Hendley Associates website. True to his word, Gavin had revised his search list and provided Jack with the names of 23 brunette Aida Kuriches. That was a lot of Aidas, and only 48 hours to check them all out before his flight back to Dulles. He spent the rest of the evening mapping out the location of each new Aida. His intention was to call as many as he could, but when all else failed, he would attempt a personal contact. He was running out of time. Like his father, Jack was a bulldog when it came to finding something, or someone he was looking for. His mother jokingly called it a mild form of OCD. His dad preferred the less clinically precise term, stubborn. So did Jack. The next morning, Jack went back to the same breakfast restaurant as before and ordered the same chocolate hazelnut pita and 2 cups of Bosnian coffee. Why not? He was still on vacation. The only difference this time was he wore a ball cap to help prevent facial capture by any surveillance cameras. Kolak had spooked him. Fortified again with sugar and caffeine, he decided to take an extra precaution and found an electronics store, where he purchased a prepaid phone. He was certain that his iPhone was secure, but somehow Kolak had figured out what he'd been up to. The use of a local phone with a local number might make his prospective Aidas more likely to pick up, too. Kolak's promise to back off rang hollow to Jack, considering the fact that he was apparently using him to find Aida, which didn't make much sense. With his resources, Kolak could find anybody, or at least had a better shot at finding somebody in Bosnia than Jack did. And why in the world would he be interested in the same Aida, unless Kolak was telling the truth and he was just as intrigued by the story as Jack was? Jack wandered over to a small park in the middle of the Turkish part of the old town. He found an empty bench not far from a chess game. The enormous board was painted on the concrete in gray and white squares, and the giant pieces ranged from shin-high pawns to thigh-high kings. There was a gallery of old men sitting on benches close to the action, smoking and kibitzing as a 30-something guy in a sport coat lifted a pawn and took out the horse-headed knight of a silver-haired gent in a red and gold Adidas tracksuit, much to the gallery's delight. Jack shook his head. From where he sat, the move seemed a strategic blunder. Keeping one eye on the spirited game, Jack began smiling and dialing in his hunt for the next Aida. He felt like a retiree playing nickel slots in Vegas, certain the next pull of the handle would hit the jackpot. 4 calls in, that certainty began to fade. His 5th call went straight to voicemail, and according to his map, her place of business was just a few minutes away on foot. Abiding by his new search protocol, Jack decided to head over there. It also gave him an excuse to see some more of the old town. He passed a large metal statue of a naked male figure on a pedestal in the middle of a small rose garden, in full sight of a towering, onion-domed Orthodox church. The figure looked like he was doing pull-ups on the shattered longitudinal axis of an open globe. His face pointed to the sky, but his polished bronze Johnson headed in the other direction. Jack read the inscription. "Multicultural man builds the world." Jack shook his head. He wasn't into modern art. Jack walked east on the narrow pedestrian lane past the Orthodox church, then turned left for half a block until he bumped into the wider pedestrian street, Ferhadia. It was lined on either side with restaurants and shops, with quite a few wares on tables and stands along the walkway. Jack wandered along with the crowds of tourists, stopping occasionally to inspect a few places, half looking for presents for his mother and younger siblings, half conducting an SDR, surveillance detection route. Kolak had said he wouldn't put a tail on him, but Jack wasn't exactly the trusting type. The incident with the Romanian woman still had him on edge as well. Most of the wares Jack found in the shops were touristy knickknacks, gauzy scarves, bronze teapots, postcards, beaded purses. He checked the labels, expecting to see Made in China stamped everywhere. But in this part of the world, Turkey had the corner on cheap stuff. A few minutes later, he found himself back at the fountain on the corner of the Gazi Hasrev Beg Mosque, where people were still lapping up the cool water with their cupped hands. There were more hijabs and fully covered women here, and bearded men in traditional garb than he'd seen anywhere else in the city. He walked past the open gate of the mosque grounds and caught a glance of men and women segregated on either side of the elevated rug-covered porch, praying on the outside. Still others in the courtyard were washing their feet before putting their shoes in the tall cubbies farther up. Clearly, there were more tourists than worshippers entering the compound. A large knot of Russians wearing earphones listened to their guide yammering into a microphone, leading them through the gate. Jack followed them in. The same smooth, tightly fitted stones on the walkway led him into the wide but modest courtyard. As a Catholic, Jack wasn't completely sure how he felt about this place. The men and women praying up front seemed sincere enough, and God alone knew when Jack had last been in a church to pray. On the other hand, he thought about the long and troubled history between his faith and theirs, a history too often characterized by blood and death. The European Crusades were a counterattack against the invading Islamic armies that swept throughout the Middle East and deep into the heart of Europe. But that was ancient history, as a sign nailed to a tree in the courtyard confirmed. The sign displayed a stylized drone with a red slash through it, wordlessly proclaiming, "No drones." Jack smiled at the anachronism and headed back out of the gate toward his destination. Chapter 32. Jack crossed through the pigeon-jammed and tourist-crowded square of the Sabil, an 18th-century wooden fountain, beautifully carved and topped with a metal dome like a mosque. He waited at the light for the sea of cars and buses to pass before crossing the street and back out into the bustling part of town. He walked past eclectic styles of buildings, some Western European-inspired, others more Mediterranean, and still others unremarkably modern and utilitarian. Sadly, most were marred by graffiti. He followed his Google Maps directions until he reached a bus-wide alley and turned in, walking past a few storefronts and restaurants to a courtyard and the glass doors of the building he was searching for, the Happy Times Balkan Tours office. A bell hanging on the door tinkled as Jack entered the tiny lobby. A young woman with dirty blonde hair stood behind the counter, glasses perched on her nose. She glanced up from a book she was reading at the sound of the bell. Could it be her? "Dobr den," the woman said. Smile lines radiated against her soft brown eyes. Nope, not her. "Are you here for the 2 o'clock tour?" she asked. "Afraid not. I'm here to see Aida Kuric." The woman frowned. "I'm sorry. She is not here at the moment." "Is there a way I can reach her? It's important." Her frown hardened. "Excuse me, please." The woman disappeared behind a closed door and shut it behind her. Jack heard muffled voices. A moment later, it swung open and a man appeared. He was short and athletically built, with sparkling dark eyes and an infectious, bearded smile.
"May I help you, sir?" Amir asked.
"I'm looking for Aida Kurich. She is not here at the moment. Is there something I can help you with? Arrange a private tour, perhaps?"
"No, nothing like that. I'd just like to speak with her."
"What do you want to talk to her about, may I ask?"
"It's private."
Amir's eyes narrowed like a cobra's just before a strike, his smile frozen.
"She's not here today, but I can leave a message for her."
"When will she be back?"
"I don't know."
Jack wasn't sure why this guy had his back up, but he figured he'd better change tactics. He pulled out his wallet and handed him a business card.
"Honestly, it's no big deal. I leave town tomorrow. A friend of mine asked me to look her up and to give her a letter."
Amir studied the card.
"You can leave the letter with me if you like."
Jack forced a smile.
"I appreciate that. It's just that I have to make sure it's really her. That's why I need to meet her."
"I will give her your card and your message. Is there anything else I can do for you?"
"No, but thanks for your time."
The sparkling shine returned to Amir's eyes.
"Of course. We are here for you, anytime."
Jack could feel the smaller man's gaze boring into the back of his skull as he headed out the door.
"Swing and a miss," Jack whispered to himself.
Number 5 of 23 was probably a no-hitter. Time to push on. He pulled out his phone to call the next Aida on the list, hoping for the best. Trieste, Italy. Dom called ahead to Lisanne after forwarding Iliescu's address to her, a hotel in Trieste, asking her to book a room for Adara and him at the same place, ideally on the same floor as the Romanians.
"I guess I'll be sleeping in the van," Midas said with a wink after Dom hung up.
"We won't be spending the night. Just need the room reservation for cover. Besides, you Ranger guys are tough. I'd bet a night in a van wouldn't be the worst place you ever slept."
"Not by a long shot," Midas said, and laughed.
Dom directed the retired colonel to take them back to the FBO hangar and the Gulfstream. The airport was on the way to the city center where the hotel was located. Besides the pistols and ammo they had stored in well-hidden shielded storage lockers, the Hindley Associates aircraft possessed several hidden items of particular use on field ops. Dom needed to grab one of them, and he called ahead to Lisanne to retrieve it. When they arrived, Lisanne greeted them at the hangar door.
"I hope you don't mind, but I did a little research," Lisanne said.
"You're in luck. Your hotel uses Onity locks."
"Damn lucky."
"I downloaded Gavin's Onity program into the Arduino microcontroller. It's ready to go."
"Thanks."
Dom shouted a greeting to the two Gulfstream pilots on the way to the cabin ladder. First Officer Chester Country Hicks and the Captain Helen Reed were cleaning up at the open sink in the maintenance bay after performing a thorough inspection of the aircraft.
"Where to next?" Reed asked.
"No telling where or when," Dom said. "I hope you guys brought a deck of playing cards."
Hicks laughed.
"Never leave home without 'em."
Dom followed Lisanne into the cabin. The item Dom had requested sat on the polished rosewood table in a plastic case about the size of a paperback, along with three holstered Sig Sauer P938 micro-compact 9mm pistols and extra mags. The single-stacked 6-plus-1 Sigs were built for concealed carry, not combat operations, but were handy enough in a pinch. Better a pea shooter in the pocket than a .45 in the truck, his twin brother Brian had always said.
"Where did that come from?" Dom asked himself. Man, he missed that guy. Dead for too many years.
Dom snatched up the plastic case Lisanne had retrieved, but passed on the weapons.
"I'm not expecting any trouble. Besides, if we get pulled over for any reason, we'll be on the dry pasta and tap water diet for the next 5 years if we're caught with those things."
"I thought you Italians liked pasta," Adara said.
"I do. With candlelight and violins in a fine restaurant, not in some gray bar hotel."
"Your call," Lisanne said. "Just giving you options."
"One more thing,"
She pulled out two wheeled suitcases and set them in the aisle. For the two of you. If you're checking in, you need to look the part.
Good thinking.
Dom checked his watch. We gotta roll.
Midas parked the van on a side street just off the wide and stately Piazza Unità d'Italia, near the small boutique hotel. Dom and Adara showed their passports to the vivacious 30-something Italian woman behind the counter, the spray of freckles on her pretty face a perfect complement to her mop of brown curly hair tied off in a fashionable pink bow. In flawless English, she gave them instructions about their room and informed them about the magnificent buffet breakfast available tomorrow morning. Dom's mouth watered as she described it, saddened to know he wouldn't have the chance to partake. As they left the lobby, they heard the woman on the phone chatting in crisp German. Unfortunately, their room was booked two floors above Iliescu's, but at this time of day, and with the perfect weather, nobody seemed to be around anyway. Inside the small but well-appointed room, Dom broke open the small plastic case and removed Gavin's device, slipping it into his coat pocket. Moments later, with Adara standing guard, Dom gently knocked on Iliescu's door. No response. Good. He removed the device from his pocket and slipped the socket connector into the magnetic lock's DC rechargeable power socket, and in less than a second, the Arduino microcontroller, loaded with Gavin's capture software, grabbed the lock's own stored key code and opened it. Voila, Dom said, pushing the door open with his shirt sleeve to avoid leaving prints. He was careful to leave the multilingual Do Not Disturb door hanger in place as well. He nodded to Adara. After you. Adara brushed past him and into Iliescu's room as Dom pocketed the lock-picking device and shut the door quietly behind them. He wasn't sure if the hotel monitored the door locks of its guests to keep track of room occupancy for the maid service. He hoped not. Judging by the condition of the room, he thought it had been ransacked. Empty liquor bottles, unmade bed, dirty clothes on the floor. But apparently, Iliescu was just a slob. I'll check the bathroom and closets, Adara said, snapping on a pair of gloves. Dom was pulling on his gloves, too, nodding at the bedposts. Note the silk ropes affixed to each bedpost, counselor? He pointed at a collection of male prosthetics on the nightstand. And for your edification, please observe... Gross. Let's get on with it. I'm getting the willies.
So did she, apparently.
Dom smiled. Double gross. 15 minutes later, they had scoured every corner, drawer, shelf, and container. Nothing. No weapons, no electronics, no clues. Not even a secret decoder ring, Dom said. Now what? Dom glanced around the room and thought of another tasteless joke, but the serious look on Adara's face told him to cool his jets. They were a committed, fun-loving couple when they weren't at work, but out in the field, she was all business. That was part of their deal. Her work ethic was just one of the reasons she got promoted to field operative from the position Lisanne now occupied so skillfully. Instead, he offered, "Let's get back to our room and call Gavin. Maybe he's got an idea." Back in their room, Dom and Adara called Midas, then the three of them jumped on a conference call with Gavin and Jerry on Adara's encrypted phone. Dom laid out the dead-end situation they now found themselves in. Gavin, I had this crazy idea. You pulled up Iliescu's flight schedule, so we know the cities she's been to. Any chance we could collate a list of those cities from the last year with a list of unsolved killings and suicides that occurred within 7 days of her arrival?
Yeah, sure. But it would take a while. Problem is, people die every day in big cities. Even if we placed her in temporal proximity to some of those deaths, we wouldn't know which ones she might be connected to. We'd be pushing on a string.
They batted around several more ideas, all of them leading to more dead ends. It was possible to trace Iliescu's movements, but that didn't get them closer to linking her to the Iron Syndicate or to the reason for the attempt on Jack's life. Exasperated, Midas asked Jerry,
You said we had some intel from MI6 on the Iron Syndicate. Some guy on the board of a company connected to those jokers.
That's right.
Any chance we can get hold of that guy? Shake his tree a little bit?
There's too big of a chance we'd be pissing into the Brits' punch bowl, Jerry said. Who knows where their investigation is, or how they got that intel. We might be compromising one of their sources.
So how about we read them in on what's going on? Get them to shoulder some of this weight.
Technically, MI6 doesn't know we exist, so I'd have to go through official channels. Mary Pat Foley, most likely. But if Gavin's right, the Brits don't know anything more than we do at this point, and blowing this thing up into an international incident without anything to go on is only going to cause more problems without solving any of them.
Why not just order Jack back home? At least we can protect him here,
Gavin asked. Jack's due to fly back tomorrow anyway. He's pretty good about protecting himself. Besides, he's determined to finish what he's started.
And even if we get him home, there's no way to keep Jack safe short of locking him up, Tom said.
And that ain't gonna happen.
Midas chimed in again.
What we need is the long-term solution. Find these Iron Syndicate bastards and take them out.
Agreed, Jerry said. Easier said than done for an enemy we can't identify or locate, or in fact confirm even exists.
Gavin, is there any way you can take that list of known cities Iliescu has visited and try to figure out some kind of pattern of movement? Maybe she's on a circuit, making regular stops at certain times of the year. Coordinate that with her bank deposits, that sort of thing.
It's worth a try. I'll get right on it.
And I'll keep thinking about the MI6 piece. There might be something to that. I just need to figure out what it is and how to go about it.
What about us? Dom asked. What can we do?
Sit tight. Put up your feet. We won't be sending you back out until tomorrow at the earliest. Trieste is a beautiful little city. Go enjoy it. I'll be in touch.
The conference call ended. Dom reached into his pocket and handed the keycard to Midas.
You keep the room. We'll take the van and grab the others and find somewhere to stay.
Midas shoved the keycard back into Dom's hand.
No way, kid. You two relax. Uncle Midas will take care of the rest.
Adara started to protest, but Midas cut her off.
I know, you're both pros. But tonight you're off duty. So take advantage of it while you can. In our line of work, tomorrow isn't guaranteed.
Chapter 33. Pančevo, Serbia. Serbian troopers fast-roped from the Mil MI-8 hip single-rotor helicopter hovering low over the ministry building as the gunfire chattered throughout the 7 floors beneath. The chopper roared away as the last pair of boots hit the roof. On the street below, the first captives emerged from the front entrance, prodded forward by short-barreled AKS-74Us of the civilian-clad Serbian special ops fighters. The captain in charge of the building assault radioed in over the speakers on the observation deck.
Objective achieved, Colonel.
Lieutenant Colonel Maksimović, the commander of the Serbian 63rd Parachute Battalion, picked up his comms.
Well done, Captain. Congratulate your boys for me. We'll muster in 15 minutes for a debrief and prep the exercise again.
Yes, sir.
The tall Serbian colonel was genuinely pleased. The exercise couldn't have gone any better. That was fortunate, given the two Russian officers standing next to him watching the live video feeds. Colonel Smolov, HORF, Hero of the Russian Federation, commanded the Russian 45th Guards VDV Airborne Detached Spetsnaz Brigade. A distinguished combat veteran, Smolov was also in charge of the Slavic Sword and Shield training exercise today. As part of the Special Brigade of the Serbian Army, the 63rd was one of the elite Serbian Spetsnaz units, a mirror image of the Russian 45th Guards. Not only was the Russian commander a personal hero of the Serbian colonel, but the Serbian's future military career depended upon today's evaluation by Smolov. The man standing next to him was equally intimidating to the tough Serbian parachutist.
Colonel Denisov was a lean, bespectacled GRU staff officer, rumored to have spearheaded the deployment of a malware android app used by Polish tank officers for fire control. Thanks to Denisov's operation, the Russians were now tracking the exact whereabouts of